the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to College Football Country. I am Josh Parcell, founder of College Football Country, cfbcountry.com, the voice of college football fans every week. Check out the website. Make sure to download and subscribe to the podcast wherever podcasts may be. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. You know where to find it. Go download and subscribe. And don't forget, if you do subscribe, I'm giving away a $25 Amazon gift card by the end of the year if I hit 150 reviews on Apple. We're getting closer. We're about 30 away right now. So go fill it out. Go tell your friends. Go tell your mom, your dad. Go tell your cousin, your classmate. Doesn't matter. Tell them to rate and review the podcast. Make sure they subscribe as well. And when they review the podcast, leave your name as your favorite college football player of all time or the most random name you can think of. I will pick my favorite response, my favorite name of the group. And that person, if you're listening, I'll announce the winner on the podcast later this season, whenever we hit 150. So make sure you're listening every week. You never know when we're going to hit 150, and I will give away that gift card. If the first person doesn't claim it, I'll give it to somebody else. Make sure you guys, again, download and subscribe. On to the show, and we've got a loaded show today. Kyle Bailey will join me in the second segment of the show to talk Virginia Tech. We'll talk about their big win over Duke, how they bounce back against Old Dominion. Are we buying into the Hokies long term with Ryan Willis at quarterback? And of course, looking ahead to Saturday night's game against Notre Dame. But right now, I start with Clemson, and what a game it was on Saturday. Taking on Syracuse, this was a spot where Trevor Lawrence, in his first start, was expected to make a statement that the Tigers were a true national championship contender, that Trevor Lawrence was the guy. And there was all sorts of drama and controversy around the way Kelly Bryant departed the program, the way he transferred midweek leading up to that Notre Dame game. And I said last week that I wasn't thrilled with the way Kelly Bryant handled it, not necessarily because of Kelly Bryant, but because of the rule. So not to criticize him, but I had a big problem with a rule that allows players to transfer midseason. It leaves the team unprepared for those departures. It makes it really difficult for a team to adapt to losing a key player in the middle of the year simply because they're unhappy. And we saw that worry come to fruition in the second quarter on Saturday against Syracuse. Down 13-7, Trevor Lawrence goes out with a neck injury, and in comes Chase Bryce, who hasn't attempted a pass essentially this season, has played no meaningful snaps, and he has to go in and try to win them an ACC game coming from behind in a game that they cannot afford to lose. Clemson, if you look at their schedule, throughout the rest of the season, they play one ranked team the rest of the way, and that's NC State. Now, it may look different at the end of the season, but if you really look at the teams that Clemson has on its schedule, I don't know who will finish the year inside the top 25. It may be nobody. And if Clemson were to lose a game, I don't know that they make the playoff. And of course, there's a million factors that go into this. We don't know what's going to happen in the SEC. We don't know what's going to happen in any conference for that matter. And that plays a huge role in deciding, you know, will a one-loss ACC champion get in? We can't say in October, in early October, without a doubt, a 12-1 Clemson team doesn't make the playoff. But I will say this, if you look at the history of the playoff era, a 12-1 team without any quality wins probably is not getting in. It's just really hard. The only way you have a shot, it would seem to be as if your name is Alabama. I don't think Clemson has that same sort of cachet that the Crimson Tide have. I'm sorry. I know they've made three straight playoffs. They're not Alabama. They haven't won five national titles in the last 8 years. Like, they have not. They don't have the same sort of, I don't think they have the same sort of advantages that Alabama has. So I think Clemson has to go undefeated to give themselves the best chance. I think a one-loss Clemson is going to be in real trouble, because if you look at the way this season's going to unfold, again, we don't know, but you have to imagine the SEC champion is going to have at worst one loss, probably undefeated. Alabama seems like it's going to run the table. Georgia probably going to run the table, although their schedule is a little bit tougher than Alabama's, I would think, at this point. if both of those teams are undefeated going into Atlanta, and then of course you have whoever loses that game with one loss, that's going to be a heck of a team to leave out of the playoff as an at-large, because both of those teams right now look like two of the best four. Alabama's the best. Georgia is somewhere in that 2-3 range, depending on who you ask. It's as long as the loser of that SEC title game is competitive and that's a close game, I think that it's going to be really hard for the committee to leave that at-large team out of it, especially considering a team like Clemson won't have any top 20, top 25, maybe even wins to stack up against whatever Georgia or Alabama have. So if both of those teams are undefeated going into Atlanta and one loses, I don't think Clemson has a better resume, even as a conference champion, than either one of them. So that's two teams, I think, that would get in realistically ahead of Clemson if we look at the schedule today, barring a major upset. Now let's talk about the Big Ten. Ohio State's in the driver's seat now. They go into Penn State and win. So now the Buckeyes still have to play, of course, Michigan State, which doesn't look like the team they were last season, the team we expected to see this year. And, of course, they play Michigan at the end of the year and then the Big Ten championship game. I think even if Ohio State were to lose a game, and I don't know how realistic that is, I think they're the best team in the Big Ten. Michigan's going to test them at the end of the year. If Ohio State wins the Big Ten with only one loss or, of course, undefeated, they're getting in. I think if Wisconsin runs the table and beats Ohio State or whoever comes out of the Big Ten East, Wisconsin would have a better resume than Clemson as a one-loss team. So now you're talking about that's three spots that are gone. In the Big 12, Oklahoma is vulnerable. I would not shock me if Oklahoma loses a game or two down the stretch. But you have Oklahoma, you have West Virginia, maybe even Texas. You have some schools in this mix in the Big 12. If a one-loss team, whoever it might be, comes out of the Big 12, they're going to have a better resume than Clemson because there are four or five teams in that top 25 range from the Big 12. So now you're talking about two from the SEC, one from the Big 10, one from the Big 12, and then you go out to the Pac-12. You still have Stanford is sitting here with one loss, Oregon is sitting with one loss, and Washington with one loss. That's the least likely conference right now, I think, to emerge with a one-loss champion. I think it's very likely the Pac-12 ends up with a two-loss champ. But if there was a one-loss team from the Pac-12, they would have a better resume than Clemson as well. Again, more quality wins on the schedule for any one of those teams, Washington, Stanford, or Oregon. So now you're talking about two SEC, one Big Ten, one Big 12, one Pac-12. That's five teams that would have a better resume than Clemson. Let's not forget about Notre Dame. Notre Dame now, after getting through Stanford, they've gotten through Michigan. They go on the road to Virginia Tech this week. If Notre Dame beats Virginia Tech, rest of the schedule looks like cake for Notre Dame. Now, a lot can change. Not all of this is going to happen. Again, it's easy for us. We sit here in early October, and we always predict best case scenario for these teams. What happens if they win out? Reality is a lot of these teams aren't going to win out. But realistically, you're talking about a Notre Dame team that's going to have, I would think, one loss at worst. If they get through Virginia Tech, they could very well be undefeated. Pitt, Navy, Northwestern, Florida State, Syracuse, and USC is the remainder of their schedule. It's certainly possible to drop one of those games, but it would be an upset if it happened. So now you've got six teams, realistically, two from the SEC, a one-loss Big Ten champ, a one-loss Big 12, one-loss Pac-12, and then Notre Dame. That's a lot of teams that would all have better resumes than a one-loss Clemson. So that's a long-winded way of saying Clemson has no room for error. And this is the thing I think that the coaches might have underestimated at the beginning of the season as they played Trevor Lawrence and they gave him these opportunities to win the starting job. There was no question that in the coaches' minds, they knew Trevor Lawrence has the higher ceiling than Kelly Bryant. I think what they might have not realized until now is Trevor Lawrence also has a lower floor than they expected. As a freshman, you know there's going to be growing pains. You know there's going to be a learning curve. Trevor Lawrence has tremendous talent and has the arm talent to potentially challenge Alabama. Last year, we saw Kelly Bryant do exactly what Kelly Bryant did throughout the first four games of this season. It was play great football, move the ball with his legs, make impressive throws from time to time, generate great offense for Clemson. But that's what he did a year ago, and when they ran up against Alabama, they struggled. I think Clemson knew that they were doomed to repeat last year if they didn't make a change. And Trevor Lawrence, while he's a freshman and certainly has room to grow, he has the arm talent to maybe test Alabama's defense. You've got to be able to throw the ball against them, and Trevor Lawrence might have the ability to do that. Trevor Lawrence is not as good as I think people wished that he would be or expected him to be. Again, before he went out, they're losing 13-7. I mean, they were in a dogfight with a good Syracuse team, but not a team that should be leading Clemson in Death Valley in the second quarter. I mean, the Tigers were 25-point favorites. This game should have been over by just about halftime, and instead, Trevor Lawrence would have had to lead a comeback if he'd stayed in the game. So it's fascinating to, I think, see where Clemson goes from here, knowing they cannot lose a game. The coaching staff did not expect Trevor Lawrence, I think, his floor to be as low. If you look at Trevor so far, he's played in three Power 5 games and struggled pretty dramatically in two of them. Syracuse, of course, and then Texas A&M. He had to be pulled from the Texas A&M game in favor of Kelly Bryant simply so that the Clemson could hang on and keep Texas A&M from coming back to win that game in College Station. So this is an indictment on Trevor Lawrence, absolutely. It reminds me a lot of Jacob Eason a couple years ago at Georgia. You remember Jacob Eason, who comes out of Washington as a five-star prospect, number one pocket passer in high school, Elite 11 accolade, I mean, you name it. The guy was as decorated of a high school quarterback as you could be, and immediately won the job at Georgia, was expected to be the savior for the Bulldogs, and he was good, but he was a freshman. He made mistakes. They lost games with Jacob Eason under center. The only difference between Georgia in 2016 and Clemson today is that the bar at Georgia in Kirby Smart's first year wasn't to win a national title. I mean, they expected maybe a 9 or 10 win season, but people knew that Kirby Smart was rebuilding the program, so to speak. Meanwhile, at Clemson, Trevor Lawrence is playing because they think that he can carry them to a national championship game and maybe even a win in the national title. So it's different for Trevor Lawrence than it was for Jacob Eason, but it doesn't matter how decorated you are out of high school. It doesn't matter how great you were at Elite 11 or in the high school All-American games, whatever. You got to do it on Saturdays, and it's different. You go on the road into Kyle Field on a Saturday night, it's different. You play in an ACC game where you got a team that it's their Super Bowl, and they're going to give you their best effort, and they're pressuring you, and they're confusing you with coverages you didn't see in high school. It's different. And no matter how physically gifted you are, there's an adjustment there. There is a significant adjustment. And Trevor Lawrence, I think, is struggling to adapt to the college game at the rate I think Clemson expected him to. Don't get me wrong. If Kelly Bryant was not allowed to play four games before deciding whether or not he wanted to redshirt and transfer, I think Trevor Lawrence would have been the starting quarterback in August before the season opener, and Dabo Swinney would have done that to allow Kelly Bryant to transfer, but also to allow Clemson to game plan for its entire season, knowing what it has at quarterback. Now they're trying to do this sort of shuffle midseason, and it's really, really hurt them because Chase Bryce came in, did complete a nice throw on fourth down in the fourth quarter that helped them eventually win the game, but they had to turn to Travis Etienne in that game to win it for them, and you're not going to be able to do that every week. The other sneaky thing here about Clemson is the defense has been vastly underwhelming to this point. Okay, the defense has allowed 400 passing yards to Kellen Mond, who has averaged just about 200 yards in the three games since then. Last week threw two interceptions and no touchdowns against Arkansas, yet he lit up Clemson for 400 yards and no interceptions and a bunch of touchdowns. This is just this has been an awful Clemson secondary to this point. They've been dealing with injuries. Mullen and Fields have been hampered by some injuries for sure, but it doesn't matter. This Clemson team was supposed to be a dominant defense, and it hasn't been that so far to this point. That has to change because you know that, again, Dabo Swinney banked on playing this freshman quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, and trusting that defense to win them football games while Trevor Lawrence grew, while Trevor Lawrence learned how to play at the college level. What's happening now, they have to rely on Trevor Lawrence to try to win them games. That offense has to carry them because the defense is just gashing holes in the secondary. I mean, Syracuse just last week, another great passing attack, throws for 250 yards. I mean, moved the ball extremely well. It connected on several downfield passes. They connected on some long yardage situations that Clemson should not be giving up. Big plays, chunk plays that Clemson's defense needs to eliminate. And while I'm not calling for an upset this weekend against Wake Forest, I actually think Clemson responds pretty well. They know what they're up against at this point. I do think that Wake Forest has some tools that might give Clemson a little bit of trouble. Greg Dortch, Sage Surratt, those are real legitimate ACC receivers. This is not just a Wake Forest team that's going to lay down and roll over and die for Clemson. I mean, Greg Dortch has 45 catches in five games. Sage Surratt, 280 yards on the season so far. I mean, that is a heck of a 1-2 punch at receiver. And then at quarterback, Sam Hartman has been terrific as well. He's a freshman, but has shown a natural feel for the game that you can't teach. You can't teach it. And I think Clemson takes care of business. I think they win by at least two scores, maybe even three on Saturday. But don't be surprised if Wake gives this defense a little trouble, because I've seen nothing through 5 weeks that tells me that Clemson's defense is elite. And I've seen nothing that tells me that Clemson is a top 10 team. I did my JP top 10 on Monday, and I explained on this podcast, Clemson hasn't done anything to earn its top 10 ranking yet, and I'm sticking by that right now. So that's the thoughts on Clemson so far. I still think the Tigers end up running the table. I wouldn't bet against them, but some things certainly have to change, and that defense has to wake up. So we'll figure that out as we go forward. Coming up next, Kyle Bailey will join me to talk Virginia Tech. They have a big one this Saturday against Notre Dame. They rebounded nicely from the upset loss to Old Dominion. We'll break down Ryan Willis's debut as a starter against Duke. All that and more. Keep it right here on College Football Country. And welcome back to College Football Country. Josh Parcell here, and now I am joined by Kyle Bailey, as I am every week. You can catch him on Garcia and Bailey 2-6 on WFNZ and at Kyle Bailey on Twitter. And Kyle, we got to talk about the Hokies. We got to talk about the Hokies. And you weren't buying in last week. You weren't buying the Hokies against Duke on the road. Ended up winning 31-14. Ryan Willis looked like the real deal. And what were your thoughts on the way the offense looked and the way they responded in that game?
I was wrong. I was blown away. I know. Can I say it's Duke? I mean, I don't want to sound condescending, because that's not fair. I think
4-0.
No, they are. They were 4-0 and a top 25 team. And for that reason, it's a good win. And I don't want to be, again, condescending on that way, because I have a lot of respect for David Cutcliffe. But, after losing to ODU, it's not like they bounced back and beat Clemson, right? So I think still the expectations are tempered. And, there are a lot of fans out there disappointed because of the way the season's gone to this point. But, to go out there and win, and to win convincingly, with a guy who was making his first ever start on the road in league play, that was impressive. And I don't know what to take from it. I thought that I'd heard a lot about Ryan Willis and that he showed out at the spring game, but obviously didn't do enough to win the job. But I'm has a lot of people wondering right now, what it is that he did so wrong to be the backup quarterback in the beginning, because I got to be honest with you, I think the ceiling for this offense now with him taking snaps is much, much higher than it ever could have been with Josh Jackson.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. And Justin Fuente's offense, you go back to Memphis and even TCU, it was running back by committee. It is a pass-first offense, and it uses the run game effectively, but it's about having a quarterback who can throw the ball vertically. Mm-hmm. And you saw that a couple years ago with Jerod Evans when he came in. He wasn't very reliable maybe within that 0 to 10-yard range, but you start throwing the ball down the field and you have receivers who can make plays on vertical routes. That's where they were most effective, and that is clearly where Willis is strong. I mean, where he was able to throw the ball, push the ball down the field. You talk about over 330 yards for Willis, but over 300 of those yards were to freshmen and sophomores, young, big, physical receivers. It certainly seems like Willis fits the idea, fits the philosophy that Justin Fuente wants this offense to be. And I'm not going to lie, I had somebody tell me last week who was very close to the program last year, said Brad Cornelson, offensive coordinator, in practice, all over the headset, was saying, can we basically break the rules and play this kid. I know he's not eligible because he was transferring. He was sitting out. But it's like, can we somehow fix the appeal to the NCAA to let this kid play? They liked him that much. And
so then why not start him?
Well, that's what I would love to know. I really would. And I know that Jackson, of course, had the experience, and maybe Willis's perceived struggles at Kansas, which we know, of course, is as much about his surroundings as it was about anything else. Maybe that played a role. Of course, you go on the road to Florida State in week one. Maybe you want to have a guy who's a little more comfortable in your offense. I understand that. But they didn't even give Willis a chance against William & Mary. Hendon Hooker is the guy who comes in that game in the fourth quarter. So it seemed like, for whatever reason, they were hesitant to go Willis. And I can't understand why now, because he fits so much more what Justin Fuente's offense wants to be. And I think that absolutely lifts the ceiling for this team going forward.
I just, again, it's a mystery to me right now, and to a lot of people, how that kid had not seen the field before now. And you know, I say that understanding that Josh Jackson has made a play or two in his time as the quarterback, but you know, you talked about a second ago Willis's ability to be able to push the ball down the field. When you watch Josh Jackson throw the football, he throws a nice football. I mean, right. he does. He throws, I mean, just mechanically, the you know, pretty ball. Like, he throws the football well. But there seem to be so few big plays, you know, and at times a lack of touch. And I guess it was more of Justin Fuente had a guy that he knew he could trust that was not going to turn the ball over very much, and you know, would make a play here and there, but you know, they were going to win running the football and playing defense. But it feels a little bit like that switch that Justin Fuente made at Memphis to Paxton Lynch, you know, early in his career. Not the same thing, because Paxton Lynch was younger and it wasn't a transfer, obviously, but you know, he switched to a guy that seems to philosophically, like you said, fit a bit more offensively what they do. And I'm going to be curious, like everybody else, to see if he can keep this up. Because if he goes and plays well again on Saturday against Notre Dame, you're going to have a lot of people asking why in the world this kid wasn't playing already.
Well, for sure. And this is going to be a different test for him. I mean, you talk about Duke. I know you kind of belittle Duke a little bit, and I get it. More than anything, Duke was missing Mark Gilbert at corner. And, you know, a preseason all-ACC guy in the secondary. They're banged up, and that makes it difficult for Duke to try to, you know, stop any passing attack. So I do think that Ryan Willis elevated the ceiling for this offense. It's going to be a test against, of course, Notre Dame this Saturday. We'll get into that game in just a minute. But what did you make of just the response in that game for a young team to rebound after, I mean, publicly humiliating themselves against Old Dominion? Do you now trust this team? Because I said a week ago, I said, look at the other teams that have lost these embarrassing games. They typically bounce back and have good seasons. Like, we it's hard for us to imagine it in the moment.
Right.
We sit there and we're like, well, there's no way this team can win 10 or 11 games. They just lost to Old Dominion. But then again, you know, like we said last week, USC after they lost to Stanford, Virginia Tech after JMU, Michigan after App State. Like, each one of those teams came back to win 9 or 10 games or more. Do you think that Virginia Tech can still win 10 games? Because they're sitting here today with only one loss. Now, of course, they right now only have 11 games on the schedule. But do you think this is a, you know, a two-loss team? Let's put it that way. Or do you foresee them ended up, you know, 3 or 4 losses on the year?
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, that's a terrible answer, I know. But I'm just not sure because, you know, let me back up, because I'll say this too. You know, when you were talking about, you know, how bad a spot they were in and you know, how people were just shocked and let down and disappointed in this team. You know, I think it does show that Justin Fuente is a good football coach.
Yeah.
And that he made the right decisions that he had to make with respect to not only, you know, Trayvon Hill, the star defensive end that he kicked off after the ODU loss, but with Adonis Alexander, you know, which was academic, obviously, but, you know, there wasn't much leeway given there. With Mook Reynolds, you know, he's going to run the program the way he wants to run the program. He's going to have it, or he's going to do it with guys who buy in and do the things that are asked of him. And, you know, a lot of folks like you and I were questioning him a little bit after the ODU loss, saying, hey, you know, is there one of these big stinkers every single year? Is that a fatal flaw in Justin Fuente? Well, he turned around after, you know, the most embarrassing loss, certainly of the season, one of the most embarrassing losses in modern football history. And he took a young group of guys with a backup quarterback on the road against a top 25 opponent with a good defense.
Yep.
And, you know, with the starting quarterback, Daniel Jones, back, who will play on Sundays.
Oh, yeah.
And beat him like a drum.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had him ready. And it wasn't just a, you know, one of those vintage Bud Foster defensive performances where they just clamped down and won the game 17-5-6. I mean,
yep.
The offense looked phenomenal. So, you know, can they keep doing that? I guess. But I've got a feeling they're going to play really well Saturday night against Notre Dame. I don't know if they win the game. I think Notre Dame is better. They're older, they're more experienced, they're deeper. That offensive line, I don't know how they're going to get a pass rush on Saturday night, quite honestly, but I'm curious to see if they do play well on Saturday. I think they will. I think it's going to be a great game. And if they do that, I think it's going to once again speak volumes about the fact that Justin Fuente runs a pretty good program.
Well, and I think that it does say a lot about his ability to get that team refocused and re-energized for a very losable game. They came in underdogs in that game. I mean, they came in
a full touchdown.
Almost a touchdown. I mean, exactly. A touchdown underdog in Durham. And they played like a team that had its back against the wall. And Justin Fuente did a terrific job. I still think that we need to, when we're evaluating Justin Fuente, we need to keep in mind that he continues to lose some games he shouldn't lose.
Sure.
And eventually, that's not going to be acceptable anymore. It's one thing when you're building the program. I think fans can be a little bit more tolerant of a slip-up here and there. But come next year, bar's higher. And the bar is going to be higher for Virginia Tech because they're going to have experience. They're going to have a schedule that sets up for them to make a run towards the ACC and perhaps even more. And a loss like that, just no longer can you afford it. When the bar is a little lower and maybe, you know, just reaching the ACC title game is the goal, you can slip up here and there and people may give you a little bit of a pass. But at some point, that loss has to go away. I chalk a little bit up that Old Dominion loss to youth inexperience. I mean, you can only put so much of that on Fuente. He's just got a JV team out there, essentially. I mean, it's so many freshmen and sophomores. Those kids needed the wake-up call. I tweeted this, and most people were on board with me, but some people, you know, gave me a little bit of junk on Twitter for saying, you know, that Old Dominion loss could end up being the best thing to happen to the program because of the potential I see in these younger kids, that maybe that was the wake-up call they needed early in their careers. Get it out of the way now so that when the bar is raised in a year, they have that experience to draw back on. Spinning it forward to Notre Dame, here's the thing I want to point out. Virginia Tech's home field advantage, fans aren't going to like hearing me say this, might be one of the most overrated in football right now. Name a big time, and I'm talking top 10, top 15 team to come into Blacksburg and lose in the last 10 years.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know. You put me on the spot.
But I don't even need an answer. But Virginia Tech has come up short in a lot of big home games. Like, at some point, and I don't think it's going to be Saturday, but at some point, Virginia Tech has to become more than an intro song. Like, I think so much of the home field advantage comes from.
I hear what you're saying, but I think at the same time, though, it was. And those leaner years at the end of Frank Beamer spawned a little bit of a different generation of fans, right? Because you go back to certainly the late 90s, early 2000s, the late, you know, latter part of the first decade of the 2000s when Tyrod Taylor and that group were winning ACC titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had an entire student body that was all they'd known was winning football. You mm-hmm. know, all they had known was ACC championship games and, you know, run to the national championship game and always being in that conversation and
yep.
you know, year in, year out, preseason, top 5, top 10, top 15. And then all of a sudden, for about a four-year stretch there, you saw a bunch of teams run through at 6-6, 7-5, you know, just scratch and claw just to make a bowl game a couple of times, scratch and claw just to beat UVA again. And so I think that that's taken a toll. You know, that in conjunction with, you know, ticket prices going up and people staying home increasingly to watch on TV, I honestly believe it's becoming that way in a lot of places. There's an effect that's happening across the country. And again, then you factor in those leaner years at the end of Frank Beamer's tenure there. There's an entire graduating class, probably in a half, of that fan base that didn't know really any true winning football. And I think that's taken a little bit of a toll.
That's absolutely fair. And of course, you know, the struggles at home, so to speak, that I'm talking about certainly go hand in hand with the program taking a little bit of a dive. But having said that, I mean, you have to go back quite a ways to find a marquee home win, especially at night. Like, Virginia Tech gets this, I think, reputation for being this vaunted place to play at night. And it gets loud and it gets electric before the game. But once the whistle blows, Tech has not lived up to the billing at home most of the time. You go back, think about the
2014 Miami.
Well, 2011, you're talking about the Thursday night game?
Yeah.
That was, so in 2014, they played Miami at home and lost 30-6. But it was 2016, it was Fuente's first year, where on Thursday night they housed a Miami team. But the Miami team went 9-4. That was a good win, sure. I mean, like I said, I'm not saying there's none. But what I'm saying is, I mean, they got housed by Clemson a year ago. They stood toe-to-toe for a little bit with Ohio State. That game, they never stood a chance from the beginning. I get it. I mean, maybe if Brewer stays healthy, it's a different story.
Well, if he does, they probably do.
And maybe so. But, I mean, you're talking not just marquee games, but you know, losses to Pitt, losses to Duke in overtime. I mean, losses to East Carolina, Georgia Tech have all come into Blacksburg and won. They need to reassert themselves, I think, as a tough place to play again. And they're getting closer as a program, and I think that's going to help out a little bit. But even if you go back to the Miami game in 2011, when Logan Thomas scored on 4th-and-1, and the fans go nuts at the end of the fourth quarter, and that's a game that gets played. It's literally played on loop in the Merriman Center. You walk into Blacksburg, and that's the first thing you see. Yep. Exactly. That Miami team went 6-6.
Oh yeah.
So it's not like that was a vaunted vintage Miami team that the Hokies beat, and Lane Stadium was electric. Great environment, but you go back, they haven't won a top 10 or a top 15 game in that stadium in quite some time. They used to do that. You go back to 2001, 2, and 3, that Brian Randall, of course, the Michael Vick era, if you want to go back even further, like that was when they were at their peak. And since then, heck, 2007, they blew the game against Matt Ryan. Like a lot of these chances they've had on the big stage, the biggest of stages, national TV, college game, they would have been here if Old Dominion hadn't have happened. They haven't made that mark. I think to try to, you know, James Franklin last week said they need to go from a great program to an elite program. Virginia Tech's not quite at Penn State's level right now. But at some point, I think a win like Saturday night would go a long way in continuing that climb forward.
Yeah, it might. I think that, like anything else, you know, winning fixes all those things that you're talking about, and winning one of those big games is what you're talking about. They've gotten embarrassed a couple of times. I mean, I go back to 2011 against Clemson. That was that first Taj Boyd, Sammy Watkins team right. That came rolling through Blacksburg. I think the Hokies were ranked number 3 in the country, and I think Clemson was number 23, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe that was the final score. I forget which. I think Clemson might have been the top 15 team.
It was 38-10. I got it right here. Clemson blew them away.
I mean, I remember listening that week to the Dan Patrick show, and he was one of the many national shows touting Logan Thomas as a preseason Heisman candidate, and that Logan Thomas was this Cam Newton-esque quarterback, and you know, it turned out that really didn't work out that way. But, no, there have been a lot of those. And, you know, I guess it's
– Oh, it was 23-3. I was looking at the – they lost twice to Clemson that year. They lost 38-10 in the ACC title game.
Yeah.
23-3 in Blacksburg. But, yeah, your point remains. That was early in the season. Logan had a lot of hype.
Oh, yeah. No, there's been a handful of those. But, you know, part of the problem, too, has been that, you know, how many opportunities have they gotten because of the Coastal Division? You know, that's something that has to be factored in because you only get to play Clemson and Florida State – what, you know, once every 6 years?
Right.
And so you get Clemson. Let's be honest about it. I mean, there are 4 big-time college football atmospheres in the ACC that I would qualify as those, I think. 4, I don't know. I'm not going to argue beyond 4. You know, and 2 of those are on the Atlantic side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Miami is a lot of fun when they're good. I mean, they're fair-weather fans, but when they're really, really good and in the national picture, it does get rowdy there, so it can get loud and it can get fun. You know, but you only get to get Clemson and Florida State to come to Blacksburg.
You know, once a decade.
Once a decade. Not even.
Right.
Once every 12 years.
Right.
So, you know, the Coastal Division has not been great. Duke and North Carolina, I have a lot of respect for Cut. I think North Carolina still has a ton of potential, but they are still basketball schools. You know, and then Georgia Tech's had some flashes, but, you know, Bobby Dodd's not exactly home to a fearsome football program. I don't know how many opportunities you're supposed to get in a division that has routinely just been meh. Yeah, for the last 10 years. So,
well, yeah, I think we can both agree that a win over Notre Dame on Saturday would go a long way.
Well, sure.
For the program, for the reputation of Lane Stadium, I just think sometimes it gets a little more credit than maybe it's earned over the last decade to 15 years.
What does that mean? But at the end of the day, though, what does it really mean? I mean, I don't know that. Does the 12th man, is it loud and impressive as it is? I mean, how many games has it won, right? I mean, and I would say the same thing about Blacksburg. It is a fearsome environment, you know, when you first get there, and you can get rattled early on. And if you get swept up in it, and, you know, Tech scores a couple of touchdowns and just jumps on you early and an avalanche hits and it gets loud, okay, that's fine. You know, but when games settle in, you know, are they louder on third down? Then I don't really know.
Right.
I'm not sure about that.
Right.
I think maybe that that gets overhyped a little bit, because the best players in college football, they thrive on that sort of stuff.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I mean, if they go out and beat Notre Dame on Saturday, and they can say in, you know, the course of 2 or 3 seasons they've beaten Notre Dame in South Bend and then beat a top 10 Notre Dame team at home, I think that would certainly start to qualify.
Real quickly before you go, what's your prediction for Saturday?
Oh, man. I think we're going to see a really good ball game. I think this is going to be I think it's going to look somewhat like Penn State, Ohio State. When it's all said and done, I think Ryan Willis is a gamer, man, and I think he's going to play well. You know, I think he probably turns it over one time critically when it hurts. But I think he throws a couple touchdown passes. I think this is like a 27-24 ball game.
So, yeah, I'll have my pick in the next segment. But it's going to be a fun atmosphere for sure, and it is a huge opportunity yet again for Justin Fuente and Virginia Tech to take a step forward. So, Kyle, we're going to let you run, but appreciate it, man, and we'll do it again next week.
Yeah, man, thanks.
Coming up next, I'll pick games in Week 5 in the ACC as well as break down a lot of coaching turmoil in the conference. You're talking about as many as four teams that could be changing coaches at the end of the season. I'll tell you who. Coming up next on College Football Country. And welcome back to College Football Country, final segment of the show. Thanks again to Kyle Bailey for joining me for last segment, talking about Virginia Tech and their chances against Notre Dame this week. Big opportunity for the Hokies in the program to bounce back after being the laughingstock of college football just 2 weeks ago. But now it's time to talk about some other teams that are in the bidding for the laughingstock of college football, or at least the ACC. And there are as many as four programs in the conference right now that have a chance to change coaches. And I don't like to get hyperbolic. I don't like to be the hot take guy who calls for coaches' heads, but there have been some programs in the conference this year that have an opportunity to be good programs and quite honestly have just fallen drastically short of it so far. And I have to start with Louisville. If you watched Louisville against Florida State last Saturday, what on earth was Bobby Petrino thinking at the end of that game, throwing the ball with a lead with less than 2 minutes to go? What ended up happening is they turn it over, they're intercepted, Florida State drives down the field in less than a minute, wins the game 28-23, and Louisville is left holding the bag. Meanwhile, Bobby Petrino's team is an absolute mess. This team now is 2-3, 1 win against an FBS team, and that was a 3-point win against Western Kentucky on September 15th. Bobby Petrino failed at Louisville when he had the chance to turn them in to one of the elite teams in the ACC. When you have this generation's Michael Vick, you have to win more than 8 games. You cannot go 8-5 or 9-4 with Lamar Jackson. Over the last 2 years, this team was 17-9 with maybe the most dynamic athlete that has played the quarterback position since Michael Vick in college football. There have been very few guys, even in his class, as a player. You're talking about guys like RG3, Tim Tebow, very few guys who are so dominant as dual threats. Cam Newton, throw him in the mix as well. Just true dual threat, passing, rushing, dominant players at the college level. And they didn't even play for an ACC title. Didn't even come close. And Bobby Petrino deserves to be held accountable for that. Now they've lost Lamar Jackson, and they stand here today at 2-3. They have the second worst passing attack in the ACC. They have the second worst rushing attack in the ACC in terms of yards per game. This team just is an absolute abomination on the offensive side, and that's what Bobby Petrino was supposed to do. That was his calling card, was he was an offensive guru. And it hasn't happened at Louisville. Meanwhile, you've got a coach at Purdue right now with Louisville ties, Jeff Brohm, who would love the opportunity to come back to Louisville and build that program. They are one of the most well-funded programs in the ACC. Yes, Kentucky's not exactly the biggest hotbed for recruiting, but Louisville has recruited at a fairly high level before. You can get kids out of Florida. You can go into Ohio in the Midwest, and you can recruit fairly well. Jeff Brohm showed last year at Purdue he can take a team that has major deficiencies and turn it into a respectable program. If he's able to build at Louisville, a place where he has so many connections, that is an opportunity I think he would jump on. And if Louisville doesn't make that move, somebody else will. I think they cannot afford to be patient with Bobby Petrino. Tom Jurich is out at AD. He was the guy who stuck his neck out on the line for Petrino to bring him back for a second tenure anyway. I think the writing's on the wall. Unless Louisville runs the table, finishes with 8 or 9 wins, I just don't see Bobby Petrino coming back to Louisville. I think that job's going to come open. And then you start to look at some of the other jobs in the ACC. Georgia Tech is another one that is really, really fascinating right now. Paul Johnson has wavered, it seems like, between 6 to 8 wins most years, maybe 9. Every now and then he's good for a 10 or an 11 win year. He'll make an Orange Bowl run. But they have fallen so far at this point where they're now 2-3. They were blown out by Clemson. They lost to Pitt, who's a wreck. They lost to South Florida in a game where they had the lead in the fourth quarter and blew it. This Georgia Tech team just is in danger of not even making a bowl game. And I just wonder, has the act run thin with Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech? That's another team that's gone through an administration change. The guy who brought Paul Johnson in, no longer there. They don't have any real loyalty to the guy. Georgia Tech could be so much better of a program. And there are academic restrictions that maybe prevent it from ever becoming the likes of a Georgia. It doesn't have the same alumni base. It doesn't have the same appetite for football. But there's too much talent in the state of Georgia for Georgia Tech to be a below average team in the ACC. You talk about other teams like Duke, North Carolina, Boston College, Pittsburgh even, that are so much more restricted, Syracuse, so much more restricted by their, literally just their geographic area or their history, that they cannot recruit like Georgia Tech can. I think that Georgia Tech could bring in, I mean, you talk about some talented guys that have come through there. I mean, they got Calvin Johnson, for God's sake. I mean, they have had elite players come to Georgia Tech in the past, dating back to before Paul Johnson. I think that this team, again, they have Louisville this week. Boy, whoever loses that game, I feel bad for that fan base. But they've got Duke, Virginia Tech, of course, Miami and Georgia still on the schedule. I think this team is 5 wins at most. And if they don't make a bowl game, I don't see Paul Johnson coming back. So I don't even know where to turn. I would love to hear your guys' thoughts. Let me know, where do you think Paul Johnson, I'm sorry, where do you think Georgia Tech could turn replacing Paul Johnson as head coach? I think that's an attractive job that a lot of young coaches could want. Neil Brown from Troy is going to be a popular name. He has ties in the Southeast, has had a lot of success. He could be a popular pick. If I'm Georgia Tech, I know one thing. I am going in the radically different direction from Paul Johnson. I would open it up. I would run a spread attack. I would try to make football fun at Georgia Tech. I would try to really sell yourself as the program where you can come in and play in a wide open offense, because Georgia is building a juggernaut, and it's going to be even harder to try to recruit against the likes of the Bulldogs. Clemson is going to recruit the state of Georgia extraordinarily well every year. Of course, Alabama. You've got to find a way to make yourselves different. And I think bringing in a coach who runs a fun, innovative offense would be a great way to do that. Neil Brown is one guy that comes to mind, but they could have a variety of guys. So if you got an idea, let me know who you like to take that Georgia Tech job. Another job that's going to probably come open, we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, North Carolina. North Carolina and Larry Fedora. If you watched last week, it was clear that this is a team that has quit on its coach. They have no motivation to even be competitive against the likes of Miami. Miami's not a great football team. I'm still down on Miami, but my goodness. I mean, 47-10 on Thursday night on national TV. That should have sealed his fate. I don't really understand what Bubba Cunningham is waiting for. He had the bye week as a chance to make the change, bring in an interim coach, and maybe try to salvage the season that sometimes can spark a team late in the year. Instead, he's hanging on to Larry Fedora, and I just think Fedora's lost the team. That's just my opinion. I know they did beat Pitt 2 weeks prior, 38-35 in a close one. Pitt is absolutely one of the worst teams in the ACC, along with North Carolina. I just, to me, Fedora's got to go. I would bring in Seth Luttrell from North Texas. Scott Satterfield is another name that makes a lot of sense from Appalachian State. I would prefer Luttrell, but I think either one of those guys would be good fits. I would never hire Lane Kiffin, although that's been mentioned as well. So Larry Fedora is going to be gone. So that's 3 jobs, North Carolina, Georgia Tech, and Louisville, I think are absolutely going to move on. Now, the wild card here is Pittsburgh. And I mentioned Pittsburgh is in serious trouble. It's a team that is now sitting at 2-3, lost by 45 to Penn State at home, lost by 31 to Central Florida. And I don't want to hear about UCF and their national championship and their fake titles and their banners and their parades. I don't care that UCF's a better team than Pitt. They're not 31 points better than an ACC team. And Pitt was embarrassed in Orlando losing that game to Central Florida. They lost the week before to North Carolina, of course. Pat Narduzzi has this program going in the absolute wrong direction. He was supposed to come in and be this defensive guy. You're talking about them giving up 38 points or more in three of their four games this year against Power 5 or top 25 schools. Central Florida, of course, not a Power 5 school, but might as well be. Pat Narduzzi's defense has been lifeless throughout his tenure at Pittsburgh, and that was his calling card. The offense has struggled now to reclaim the level they had when James Conner, Nathan Peterman, Tyler Boyd were there. What do you have to point to if you're Pittsburgh? Is there any reason to be hopeful for the future? Narduzzi's not an exciting presence. He's not a great recruiter. He's not a great ambassador for the program. To me, I think Pitt could go in another direction. Now, this is the one where it gets really interesting because it's not that attractive of a job. It's in a pro market. It doesn't have a ton of backing from its alumni like some of the other schools, but it does have history of success. Walt Harris won there. Dave Wanstead never really won big there, and he eventually was run out the door. But this Pitt team has lacked stability. The program has lacked stability for so long. I know they don't want to try to pull the plug on a guy after 3 or 4 years, but Pat Narduzzi, to me, just doesn't inspire anything within that program. And to me, I would move on. So another name, curious to hear your thoughts on where you would turn if you were Pitt, if you moved on from Pat Narduzzi. Seems to me like a coordinator-type job, like go hire a hot young coordinator to come in and shake things up as well and try to catch up with the times, because this offense is just anemic and the defense isn't any better. So there could be four jobs. I think there'll be at least three. There might even be four jobs that come open by the end of the season in the ACC. Rapid fire now quickly. I want to run through the picks this week in the ACC. Now, only a handful of games this week in the conference. We'll run through every single one of them against the spread. Boston College going on the road to NC State. I actually think this is a great spot for the Eagles. I know they struggled a couple weeks ago against Purdue, who has a great passing offense. NC State has an even better passing offense, but the Wolfpack struggle to run the football. 5-point spread at home. I think BC keeps this game close. I actually think Wolfpack come away with a 3-point win. I'll go 28-24. That's a 4-point win. I'm bad at math. 28-24, close game. I like BC to maybe stay inside this number. I don't know that I'll be betting on it, but for the purposes of the picks, I'm going to take BC to cover, but NC State to win at home. Syracuse on the road against Pittsburgh. 3.5-point favorites are the Orange against the Pitt Panthers. It was an emotional loss for Syracuse. And Dino Babers has a history of his team getting up for big games and falling flat in the ones that might not matter quite as much. This seems like a spot where that could happen. Pittsburgh as a home dog, 3.5. Do they bounce back after being embarrassed against UCF? This seems like a game Vegas is begging you to take Syracuse. I would too. I'm going to go against maybe my better judgment, and I'm going to take Syracuse to win this game outright on the road. I'm going to go 38-24. I think Syracuse offense keeps it rolling, and I think they knock off a Pitt Panthers defense that, like I said just a moment ago, ain't that great. Clemson, 18-point favorites on the road against Wake Forest. Love the Demon Deacons in this spot. I think Clemson does bounce back a little bit. I think they have been awakened by a couple close calls, Texas A&M and Syracuse. But I think Wake's offense is going to score. Quite honestly, I don't care how motivated, how focused Clemson is. I think Wake Forest in that receiving corps is going to make some plays against this secondary. It's a matter of, can they keep Clemson from getting up into the 40s? I think if Wake Forest can get to 14 or 21 points, I think they cover this game. I'm going to go 35-21 Clemson. So take Wake Forest inside that 18-point number. I could see this thing even moving out further, closer to 21. But Wake Forest, I think, has the personnel to give Clemson fits. Florida State at Miami. Remember when this game mattered? no longer relevant. Florida State has been awful this season. I have wanted to back Florida State every single week, and they keep letting me down. Even though they won last week outright on the road against Louisville, they were 6.5-point favorites. They failed to cover, only winning by 5. This team just has failed to live up to the expectation every single week. The pressure has been on them now for almost a month to bounce back from an ugly start, and they just can't do it. At this point, it goes beyond effort and motivation. It just goes to execution and flat-out talent, and the offensive line hasn't improved since week one. They've, of course, had some injuries, and that doesn't help, but I think Miami, in this spot, wins by 2 touchdowns or so. I don't love the Hurricanes. That offense was sneaky average against North Carolina. They relied on 3 defensive touchdowns to really blow the Tar Heels away, which was as much about UNC being awful on the offense as it was about Miami being any good. So while I'm still not incredibly high on the Hurricanes, I will take them as a 2-touchdown favorite. I will go 31-17 Miami, barely covering that spread again. I wouldn't put a lot of money on it if I were you, but if you have to, take the Canes at home. Last game, Notre Dame at Virginia Tech. The Irish 5.5-point favorites on the road against the Hokies. This is Notre Dame team is entirely different in the last 2 weeks than it was in weeks 1 through 3. In weeks 1 through 3, Brandon Wimbush was the quarterback. They had a group of backups at running back, and the offense struggled. They barely got to 20 against Michigan, barely got over 20 against Vanderbilt, barely got over 20 against Ball State. But in the last 2 weeks, they've lit up two teams in Wake Forest and Stanford for over 30 points, almost 40 and close to 50 in both games. It's because Ian Book has changed this offense at quarterback, and Dexter Williams came back against Stanford, ran for 160 yards and a touchdown in his first game of the season. He was suspended for 4 games. Notre Dame is dealing with some injury concerns on the offensive line, but I don't think that's enough to allow me to buy into Virginia Tech. While I do think Ryan Willis and this offense can hit another gear, I think that Notre Dame's offense won't have trouble moving the ball against the Hokies. They're going to run the ball much better than Duke did. And don't forget that Daniel Jones and Duke came within inches, okay, of connecting on a couple long throws early in the game that would have absolutely changed the entire complexion on Saturday night. Instead, they were incomplete. Duke was forced to punt. I don't know that Notre Dame doesn't connect on some of those plays. I think Notre Dame executes better than Duke did a week ago. I like the over in this game. I think it ends up getting into that shootout territory. I'm going to say Notre Dame 38-28. I like the Irish to go into Blacksburg and win. I just think they're too talented for the Hokies and too experienced for a young Virginia Tech team. So those are the picks this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure to download the podcast as well, cfbcountry.com. For all your picks, your insight, the voice of college football fans everywhere. Thanks again to Kyle Bailey for joining me. You'll be back next week to listen, I'm sure, as we'll break down another week in college football and in the ACC. Until next time, enjoy the games.